From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Either you give the executive branch the authority to cut spending to live within our revenues, or we agree together on economic and governmental reforms to accompany a negotiated balance of spending reductions and revenue that ensures that Illinois can be both compassionate and competitive. You choose, but please choose now.
To the extent that he had, 50 radical things and now he's down to 3 radical things, I guess that's supposed to make me try to meet him in the middle. I don't think that's fair. There still are things which are not practical and they're not going to pass and they're not even good ideas.
The failed initiative is raising taxes and doing everything the same. The governor's message has not changed in substance one bit. I mean, I recognize today that tone was very conciliatory, which I think is good, but the fact of the matter is, the message is, we can't keep the same failed approach.
That's Senator Christine Redonio. She's the Republican leader in that chamber, along with Democratic Senate President John Cullerton, both responding to Governor Bruce Rauner's second budget address. That's right, a new budget proposed, even though the state has none for the current year. We'll discuss that and more on today's State Week in Review. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State House Bureau, our Bureau Chief, Amanda Vinicky, the Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. And our guest today, reporter for the Associated Press, John O'Connor. John, good to have you on once again.
Glad to be here, Sean.
Amanda, let me start with you. The governor, as we heard, offered a choice to Democrats, I guess, as a way to end the impasse, but I have to say it didn't sound all that different from what we've heard over the past many months.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right, Sean. Basically, the first choice that he offered, and this is the one he says he prefers, is in many ways what we've got right now, in which the governor says he would be willing to talk about the budget period, revenue, and figuring out appropriate cuts that both he and Democrats would be all right with, if and only if the legislature approves his so-called turnaround agenda. He did say that he would be willing to walk back from that a bit and that it doesn't all have to be done, quote, in its current form this year, but there were no details on what that means and how much he'd be willing to give. We've been asking him that really for months now and haven't gotten any sort of answer. And then there's a $3.5 billion difference, at least. There are some estimates it's actually a $5 billion difference between that choice and the second option, which the governor says, hey, if you're not going to work with me on this, then we've got to have a balanced budget. I will cut it. But in order to do so, he says, I need a bill that gives him extra authority, something that has been given to governors in the past, though not to this degree, basically carte blanche to be able to cut the state budget, cut programs willy-nilly. And those are the two options that he talked about. He did not address really what is the third option, and that is the state that Illinois is living in now, and if as it appears legislators don't want to go along with either choice A. Democrats still don't like that so-called turnaround agenda, nor do they like choice B. They say they don't want to give him this extra budget authority. Then what happens? And what we have going now, the governor didn't really talk about that.
Well, Charlie, let me go to you real quick. What is the likelihood, after what we heard this week from both sides, what's the likelihood that this impasse, as we continue to call it, stretches on beyond into the next fiscal year? What's the likelihood they get anything done here in this spring session?
Well, I think that's, I hate to say this, but I don't think there's a very good likelihood at all of getting something done, because what the governor proposes is, as Amanda said, he's basically asking for the same anti-union stuff that he's been harping on for a year. And this notion, if you don't want to give me my anti-union stuff so we can talk about actually raising the revenue needed to pay for state services, then give me unilateral power to cut. And you've done that for other governors. Well, yeah, but nothing to the extent that he's requesting here. It'd be tantamount to the little kid saying, hey, you let my sister have a cookie before dinner yesterday. Can I eat the whole box today? Because he's asking for unprecedented authority to, in essence, take money from every fund in the state except the road fund and debt service funds as he sees fit, to change payment rates to providers however he sees fit, to not make payments into the pension fund, not make the local government distributive fund income tax money that goes to cities and counties as he sees fit. In other words, he's asking the legislature to virtually abdicate entirely its role in putting together a budget. And I might remind people that the General Assembly sent him last summer a budget that was, by Democrats' admission, out of balance. The Illinois governor has powers probably stronger than most other governors in his ability to reduce spending items. He can cut out entirely planned expenditures. He can reduce any sum that the General Assembly sends him. He chose not to do that. He just vetoed the whole thing. And at the time, they explained, well, it's too hard to figure out how to do this. And I suggested at the time, give me an afternoon and I'll do it for you.
John O'Connor.
And the thing was, he has given that stance, given the fact that he has not moved at all on his agenda, or at least in a while, that he has not engendered any goodwill with the General Assembly. They have given past governors. This Democratic General Assembly gave Democratic Governor Pat Quinn extraordinary power on more than one occasion to fashion the budget. But I asked House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Chicago Democrat, what's the difference between the power you gave to Governor Quinn and what Governor Rauner is asking for now? And he said the person occupying the office.
Well, John, so I would point out, though, yeah, they sent Quinn some lump sum appropriations, but they never gave Quinn nor Blagojevich nor any governor in my memory what's being asked for by Rauner. I mean, I actually downloaded and read Senate Bill 2789, which is sponsored by Senator Christine Redonio, the Unbalanced Budget Response Act, and that's where it lays out all this power that the governor will have, any other statutes to the contrary notwithstanding.
And not to get too far into this, because frankly, it's not going to happen. They're not
True.
Going to do it. But the governor's office argues that the amount of money by which the fiscal year 16 budget that, as Charlie noted, the Democrats admitted was out of balance by such a degree, billions of dollars, that even had he used his authority and gone through with the veto pen to make reductions, that it would have been basically wiping out, you know, maybe all of education or something, or all of prison funding, because there are so many, as we're experiencing now, consent decrees and statutes that require spending go out. And this is another point that the Rauner administration says is an issue, that there's so much spending on autopilot that he literally doesn't have the ability, save for getting this extraordinary authority,
well, then
to make those changes.
Maybe that suggests then that it's time for Illinois to look at the revenue side. Everybody talks about how high our taxes are. We have the lowest income tax rate, for example, of any of our neighboring states except Indiana. They're a fraction of a percentage below us. But on the other hand, they have a local income tax, which we don't. We tax fewer services.
And Republicans would say that this is something that they are willing to talk about, but only if they get this pro-economic, they say. Unions would say that's all it is to dismantle them and to hurt the Democratic Party, that basically don't put more money into a flawed government. And that's where the governor says it's a big deal. He's a Republican. He's willing to talk taxes. So it really is basically that's, I guess, the point, Sean, that this is the same argument that lawmakers and the governor have been having for the past year, is really where they're at. But it is interesting, I think, that line of money going into a flawed system that Republicans use for taxes. That is the same line that Democrats, and particularly Senate President John Cullerton, Macoupin County Democratic Senator Andy Menar, say when it comes to education funding. And that is one area that is different about fiscal year 17, in a sense. Although it is just like this year that education was outside of the rest of the budget fight, because when Democrats did pass that budget last May, they separated it into a bunch of bills. And while the governor vetoed all of them, he did sign the money that flows to schools. And he says now that that is what he wants. He wants a clean bill that would fund schools, make sure they open. Basically, he's putting it above everything else.
Amanda, let me stop you. When he says clean bill, what are we talking about? What is he concerned might be in that?
You know, he wants it just to be money for schools, and that is it. So he's saying leave that out of the rest of the budget fight and don't include any other funding. He says schools are more important, and not only schools, so
yeah,
that's kindergarten
that's,
through
that, that's
12th
a,
grade through high school, and also early childhood.
That's a political argument because there's nothing that would prevent him, should the legislature, for example, send him a bill appropriating money for K through 12 and also money for the MAP grants. There's nothing to stop him from cutting out the MAP grants and just signing K-12. He'd have to take the heat for it, and maybe that's what he doesn't want.
I think there's a lot in this equation here, and I don't know. It's basically gets into, as I was starting to say there, that the Senate president and particularly Senate Democrats, but the House actually this past week had its first hearing on the education funding formula, are calling for changes to the way Illinois sends money to schools. And they want to take basically money from wealthy districts and get some of that over to poorer districts. And that is something that the governor said, he said that's basically a cynical tactic that has been deployed that hasn't worked in the past and pits communities against one another. In short, you have Republicans, many of whom do represent the downstate and poorer districts that would be advantaged by a change in the formula, but also you have a lot of Republicans in those targeted suburban districts that are wealthier and would lose funding under this that say no. The governor said he does not want to take money from one district and send it to the other. And this fits into the whole question of what is going on with Chicago public schools. And CPS leaders seem to think that the governor at every turn is trying to hurt them. And so there's a lot that goes here politically. And I think you're exactly right there, Charlie. The governor would say that he's proposing education get more money, despite his saying everywhere else that Illinois is in a deficit and doesn't have any funding for anything. He wants big increases in education. He wants it clean. And that gives him all sorts of leverage when it comes to both CPS blaming the Democrats, perhaps, if schools don't open on time and are part of this bigger dysfunction that's hit everywhere else in state government. I mean, it's a very much a strategic take. He would say it's because he cares about education.
Well, and I would point out the last time we actually reformed the formula, the complicated mathematical algorithm by which we allocate most of our state aid to schools around the state, was back in 1997. And to make sure that even the richer districts didn't lose a single penny, we put in a hold harmless, saying that if you're going to get less under the new formula than when you got last year, we'll make up the difference. And to be able to afford that, we increase some taxes. If you're going to send money to the poor districts without taking it away from the super wealthy districts, you need more money. I mean, it's basic arithmetic.
Let me pause here for a minute to talk about the relationship that the governor has with the legislative leaders, especially, and with Mike Madigan, primarily the House Speaker. We know that the two have not necessarily been getting along swimmingly since the governor took over. At the same time, there seems to be even an undercurrent of mistrust there, and maybe even a little bit of, I don't know, maybe feeling as though that Rauner has overstepped in some cases on the political side. There's Mike Madigan has a primary opponent in his district, which apparently, from everything I've seen, he is sort of blaming on the governor, whether the governor really has anything to do with that or not. That has to make this whole process even, you know, you overlay that on top of all the other fiscal problems the state has to make this a lot harder.
It's a situation where Mike Madigan, who has been in the legislature for 44 years and as speaker for most of the past 30, and John Cullerton, the Senate president, also a Chicago Democrat, Madigan's protege, came up under Madigan in the House and went to the Senate. They are institutions in and of themselves. They are very mindful of their offices and the way things work around here or have worked for the past four decades, they're also very mindful of the fact that they have very large majorities in both houses of the legislature. They don't seem to recognize that a plurality of voters elected Bruce Rauner as governor. And Bruce Rauner will say, you know, a year ago I asked the administration for a list, a list of the turnaround agenda that Bruce Rauner brought in, and there were scores of items on it. I believe I counted up over 50. And whether he was serious about all of them or not, he says now he has whittled them down to five, and several of them being these so-called anti-union, changing the way collective bargaining is done by local governments, and changing the way liability lawsuits are done. The Democrats will say that these are anathema to the Democratic Party and core principles, et cetera, et cetera. I asked on Wednesday both Speaker Madigan and President Cullerton, where you're not getting your deficit taken care of, your multi-billion dollar deficit. He's not getting his agenda taken care of. He says he has come down to five items. At what point do the Democrats say, look, maybe not everything needs to be collectively bargained? We can give ground on collective bargaining items A, B, and C, but not D, E, and F. And several times I questioned President Cullerton 4 or 5 times, and the answer is always, we've told the governor, we're willing to negotiate the details. So it sounds like neither side is willing to come forward and say, okay, I'm willing to give this if you give that. They just want to.
They could use a mediator.
Their positions.
They could use almost mediation here, really, on the budget. Yeah. Forget the whole AFSCME contract, because somebody that could bring these sides together to say what can you live with, what can you live with. Well, maybe that's Charlie. Maybe that's the guy.
Well, I would suggest, I doubt that, but I would suggest that, for example, on workers' compensation, if business and labor sat down and hashed out something they both could agree to, the legislature would ratify it and the governor would sign it, just as happened with the unemployment insurance changes that were enacted last year. I would suggest that on changing personal injury lawsuits can be accomplished. The legislature in the past has voted to make changes in that. And I would say that with respect to the property tax freeze, my guess is if the governor removed his provision taking away collective bargaining topics or allowing local governments to not collectively bargain over certain core issues, that the property tax freeze would pass. It's his notion of wanting to do away with organized labor that stands in the way of accomplishing all this. And in that, he's different than all the other Republican governors we've had.
But is he?
All of
does
them?
He want to? Does he want to do away with collective bargaining, or will he, agree to a balanced budget if he's given half of the items or a quarter of the items he's talking about right now on collective bargaining?
That's which ones, though, John? That's the thing.
Well, why doesn't one side or the other say what they're willing to give? This is what compromise is about. This is what
I'm suggesting the Democrats
are willing
to compromise on workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, and a property tax freeze, but they don't want to jeopardize the rights of working people to organize and bargain collectively.
Well, you know, I was there, of course, when John asked these questions of the speaker and heard him asking the Senate president, you know, so what about, all right, maybe not the full collective bargaining package that the governor has introduced, but is there some sort of give there? And as he noted, the Senate president said, you know, we've mentioned something to that effect to the governor, and then the speaker said the same, and then he wouldn't get into details. And I think that's part of the frustrating thing for us that as reporters try and cover this, when you hear, hey, we talk, but yet there haven't been meetings. There still hasn't been a leaders meeting since really, what is it, before Christmas? That when you have this devastating place for the state, whether you are somebody that is on Rauner's side and is maybe okay with some of these cuts, whether you're somebody that thinks that these cuts are horrible and are dismantling the social service structure, either way, the place where Illinois is at without a budget is bad. It is uncertainty. It is causing all sorts of harm. So what is going on and what are they doing about it? And the picture that you get largely is that neither side is really fairly, or be it because of trust issues, be it because they aren't meeting. Maybe there have been some concrete offers of Democrats saying, hey, we'll give this, and the governor hasn't accepted it because it isn't far enough. We don't know. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe they haven't. Democrats haven't been really willing to give on some of those areas. We don't know. We're not in those meetings. There don't appear to be many of those. That is why you have some people that think that this is all one set up by both sides, really, to make things as bad as they can be, point the finger at the one another, and hope that they come out the winner and the other side ends up looking like the bad guy who is the one to blame for all of this. And really, where do you go? We are at an election, and for the most part, you have in any place where there is a primary, you have one candidate that is backed by Rauner and his camp, and another side that is backed by Madigan and or Cullerton and his camp, primarily Madigan. And it has gotten to the point where, because everybody is looking to the election, is anything going to change? So that, I think the kind of frustration that both Charlie and John, I think you have in this, and listeners probably have, is just the one that is going on within the Capitol every day.
Are we talking about the primary? Are we talking about the general election until they may resolve something, and even if then?
There's a lot of talk that it could be November. Yeah, I mean, either.
Well, I originally was predicting that we would have something done after the first of the year when people knew whether or not they had a primary opponent. And that was assuming that the two sides would have reached some kind of a deal involving cuts and revenue increases, tax increases, and people in safe districts from both parties would vote for a tax increase. That hasn't happened. And some of the primary challenges, even within the Republican Party, are challenges to incumbents, particularly in our area. Senator Sam McCann is being challenged by a candidate who's backed by Bruce Rauner, because McCann had the temerity to actually vote against the governor's position once in the last year and a half, or last year.
Something that Senator Cullerton said Wednesday piqued my interest. I hadn't considered this. Sometimes I'm a little slow on the uptake when it comes to politics.
Don't believe him there.
It comes down to, and many of us reporters in our copy will summarize the stalemate, if you will, as saying Governor Rauner wants pro-business, anti-union changes in state law. Democrats say they need tax increases and spending cuts to lasso an out-of-control budget deficit. Well, what it is turning into, from maybe in the Democrats' mind, as Cullerton pointed out, it's, okay, if we give ground to Governor Rauner, what he gives us is the ability to pass a tax increase. That now Governor Rauner says, okay, Democrats, go and pass your tax increases. And John Cullerton said, let me be very clear. If there is a tax increase, it will be Bruce Rauner's tax increase. And the amount of that tax increase will be Bruce Rauner's, because it's going to take Republican votes as well. And he's going to have to direct his Republican legislators to vote for that tax increase. So Democrats are already getting defensive that they'll be the ones labeled, you know, that Rauner might be able to claim victory on an anti-union agenda, and at the same time plaster the Democrats with laying a tax increase on the
Wasn't it last month someone asked Mike Madigan about tax rates, and he said a good place to start the discussion might be where it was before the rollback, and the Republicans immediately launched a campaign, Tax Hike Mike.
Oh, it's pretty incredible watching these political commercials as is right now. Charlie noted the Sam McCann one where he's being labeled as a friend, Mike Madigan's favorite senator. And I don't think that McCann and Madigan have any sort of, you know, relationship there, but it's a line. You have, it was funny, there's a congressional one, Congressman John Shimkus calling a state senator, Kyle McCarter, liberal when he's known in these quarters as very conservative, and saying, oh, he's a Washington, D.C. insider, when McCarter's the state senator senator, and Shimkus is the one that's been in Congress. You know, I mean, these political ads can twist things either ways. And if you turn on your TV at all right now, I would say open a newspaper, listen to the radio, and actually do some research on the candidates. This goes without saying, but those ads twist in every way. So John touched on that, though, in terms of how difficult this is when we're talking pass a tax increase. Democrats say this isn't our reward. You know, often Republicans will say, hey, we will work with you on revenue if you do this, as if that's a pleasant thing. It's still going to be difficult for Democrats, for anybody, to vote for a tax increase when and if it comes to that.
Well, and the services that are not being provided now, I mean, they're just not services that go to Democrats. If you have a child with autism and you want the services, they don't ask you, well, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? I mean, there are people who are suffering, party labels aside, and there are people who are suffering in Republican districts. It's not just Democratic districts. So this notion that Republicans have as well, only the Democrats want more money for programs, that's nonsense. And you'd have to be a really mathematically challenged, semi-illiterate to actually buy that argument.
Well, John O'Connor of the Associated Press, let me go to you here for a note from the field. A court case that we've been following that had political ties for a long time finally saw some movement on that here this past week.
Dan Rutherford was the leading candidate for the Republican nomination for governor in 2014 and the most viable challenger to Bruce Rauner, who won the election. And Dan Rutherford, in the midst of that campaign, right about 2 years ago right now, was hit with a lawsuit claiming that he had sexually harassed a male staffer repeatedly beginning in 2010 when he hired this staffer. And the staffer, Edmund Michalowski, who is a Democrat and now works in a Democratic job in Cook County, also claimed that Rutherford and two aides ran a racket, that the treasurer's office was a campaign operation, and it violated federal racketeering laws. A judge in Chicago, a federal judge, Joan Lefkoe, ruled Thursday that the racketeering charges wouldn't hold up and that Michalowski may proceed with the sexual harassment case. So it does free up Rutherford from some of the challenges, and certainly Kyle Hamm and Kurt Conrad, two of his top aides while he was treasurer from 2011 to 2015, are basically out of the dark now in terms of a civil lawsuit. But Dan Rutherford, the thing that torpedoed his campaign for governor in 2014, a claim of sexual harassment, will be able to be pressed in federal court. And Dan Fainer, who is Rutherford's lawyer, says it's completely untrue. Dan has said that from the beginning, and we look forward to proving that in court.
Charlie, we've got about 30 seconds.
Okay, well, we've talked about the governor's turnaround agenda. One of the items on it is he wants to change the way legislative district maps are drawn following the federal census. Well, he may get his wish on that because the very same day he gave his budget address, the independent map people, the people who are circulating petitions to put it as a citizens' initiative, a question of changing redistricting onto the November ballot, announced that they've got almost 510,000 signatures, well in excess of the 290,000 needed to put the initiative on November's ballot. So it looks like that is going to come to pass.
All right, that will do it for today. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, also Amanda Vinicky and John O'Connor with the Associated Press. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search WUIS on iTunes. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.